the one that took Jack away to Columbia University in New York City. I make a wrong turn, but it takes me across the river to where I can see the landscape I just read about, the hills and forests, and the logs floating downstream. Coming back into town, I cross the train tracks again and find myself in the grounds of a hospital. When I ask for directions to the graveyard, I get my first concerned look. I realise the impact of what I'm asking. This happens a few more times with increasing degrees of sympathy as I get closer. Soon I'm back on Main Street, stopping at every light, noticing the French names in cafes and bars. A leather-clad couple in a black racing car let me squeeze in front of them, and I shout over the traffic, asking if they can lead me to the graveyard. They signal from behind a black windscreen and two pairs of shades for me to follow them and speed off through a red light. I lose them effortlessly. Turning left at another railway crossing, I find myself heading for an older part of town. There are boarded up weather-beaten wooden houses with guys hanging on porches. After a while, I'm lost again. I ask in a motor mechanic's workshop and a guy delivering batteries tells me to follow him. I execute yet another three-point turn in the land where three-point turns just aren't the dumb thing. The guy delivering batteries is my lucky break. It's late and getting later. He leaves me at a nondescript corner, shouting to me that I'm very close to the cemetery. I can see the gravestones through the hedge, so I park and get out. I walk some more. Three blocks later, I'm still walking, with gravestones on the other side of the hedge, but getting no closer to an entrance. I see someone coming towards me. Increasingly panicked, I persuade myself he must be a literary-minded gent. And as we pass each other, I ask him how I can find the entrance. "You'll be looking for Jack Kerouac's grave," he says. "I used to live beside the Kerouacs." He's 60 years old, I know, because he tells me. And he talks of how proud the town is of his family's former neighbours. He looks at his feet while he praises Kerouac's writing, advises me to get back into the car and drive. "It's too far to walk," he says. "It's on Lincoln and 7th. In Liverpool, you should always ask directions, because eventually someone you speak to will have known the Beatles and tell you a story about them. Anywhere in the world, you're only 2 or 3 degrees away from whoever you're looking for. In Ireland, you wouldn't think of driving into a graveyard. There wouldn't even be a road, just a path to get to the church. Then clusters of headstones dotted around the churchyard. Sure, modern graveyards are different, but still not the kind of place you'd go for a drive. In America, I guess they've had more time to plan things. I think of the funeral in Ulysses when Bloom thinks there would be more room if you buried people standing up. Here in Lowell, the graveyard is set out in blocks, like city blocks. There's a lot of room. Tree-lined avenues you can drive up and down, and you find your way around by year. I make my way respectfully to 1969. The sun is splitting the sky. It's a perfect summer's afternoon with a faint breeze barely disturbing the leaves and birds singing in the slender trees. I've got the top down and Radio Springsteen on at restrained volume. I'm thinking about all the battered copies of On the Road I've owned in my life. Those voice and piano recordings I rediscovered at a friend's place in Brisbane last year. Joyce Johnson's book, Looking at the Beats from a Girl's Perspective. And Cassidy's first third incomplete autobiography. In a way, the real thing. Listening to fans singing Cleaning Windows and seeing Sulla Strada on a table in Sandy's house in Iowa City last summer. I'm thinking about the road stretching from here in Lowell all the way across the USA to San Francisco and down to Mexico. About a teenager in Ireland reading the place names and trying to fill in the gaps with no real experience, just a mixture of longing, excitement, and the need for self-expression. I put Jack Kerouac up there beside Eliot and Joyce in my bookcase, and beside the coolest of Dylan and Howell in my record collection. The closest I got to him in person was seeing Allen Ginsberg read at Clifton Poetry Festival in County Galway early in the 90s. That is, until the guy I met today. I knew the Kerouacs. You can't see the grave immediately. There's no headstone standing up, just a plaque lying flat on the grass. T. Jean, it says, the name his mother used to call him. I sit down and scribble a poem on the back of my MapQuest directions, hold it up as small as I can, and hide it under a stone. There's no Jim Morrison-style shrine around Jack's grave, just the birds singing and his soul someplace else. It's easy here to think of how good creativity and the human spirit can get, and how transient it is. Talent, this afternoon, seems to me just as transparent as the slender trees. The grave itself is light as air, a starting point, not a destination. Anyway, I'm taking it all in and enjoying the summer sounds. I'm looking at the open-top car and trying to take a photo with the self-timer thing on my camera, when I notice it's way past the time when I should have left. I jump into the convertible to race to Connecticut and my show at the Cultural Centre. I drive out of the graveyard, hungry now, passing diners where Jack might have chewed on a sandwich, football fields where he would have played a blinder, and over the railroad track that took him away to New York City. I point the car towards Hartford, and Born to Run comes on the radio. I switch to jazz, bebop jazz. Great, thanks very much. Hey, it's been fantastic being here. Let's hear it for Megan who put this whole thing together.